X is like the real, like, mystic, like the X-Files and, you know, special cleansing agent, XL70 or something. You know, even cars, like, sporty. It's amazing. You could do a whole doctoral dissertation on the letter X and the cultural use of the letter X. But anyway, so the most powerful secret cleansing agent.
I'm dying to know.
Yes. The envelope, please. The most... The most powerful secret cleansing agent is God. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna that Param Brahma, you are the Supreme Absolute described in the Upanishads, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, you are the Supreme Abode, Pavitram Paramang Bhavan, and you are the Supreme Purifier. Because God is infinite purity. Krishna is infinite purity. So when you come into direct touch with that infinite purity, that's the ultimate cleansing agent. So the whole trick of bhakti yoga is you bring every part of you, body, mind, soul, intellect, emotions, you bring everything into direct touch with that supreme purity. So for example, you dance. We dance for Krishna. And by doing that, we're purifying that faculty, that anatomy, that part of our anatomy. We sing, we eat spiritual foods, we use our intelligence to consider and contemplate spiritual philosophy. We use our voice to speak about these things. Okay, here's the mechanism. Here's why it works. There's a very important statement in chapter 4 of the Gita, which I've always seen as an extremely important statement, where Krishna says, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, and I'll explain the rest of it. A year after George Harrison died, they did that concert for George. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, me too. See, I've only seen it like 1,000 times. Anyway, so my cousin gave it to me. So in the Indian part of the performance, Ravi Shankar, of course, wrote a special piece for George, which he called Arpanam. And that's the word Krishna uses. So the word Arpanam means an offering. An offering. So what Krishna says is that Brahmarpanam, Brahma Havir, that when you offer to the Absolute, the Havir, the substance that you offer, and Krishna here, this is a context in the Gita where Krishna is speaking symbolically and about sacrifice. Sacrifice in the sense of making an offering to something greater than yourself. In ancient cultures all throughout the world, whether we're talking about the Iliad and the Odyssey or the Vedas or anywhere, people used to offer fire sacrifices in the ancient world, where the fire was understood to represent or to embody divine power. And so when the fire consumed your offering, it was being accepted by God, because fire was acting. So for example, when you offer food, they would actually offer food into the fire. If you read, you know, Homer, how they just like throw non-vegetarian stuff into the fire. And in India, clarified butter, ghee, where you take butter and, you know, you put it on a low fire and all the impurities come, and you're left with this pure, transparent substance, which has all kinds of incredible nutritional qualities. But anyway, so they would offer ghee, which is here called havir, was the sort of the typical offering, and here stands symbolically for anything that you offer. And the fire symbolically stands for the recipient, that into which you offer, the power, the divine power to which you offer. So Krishna says here, Brahmarpana, when there's an offering to the Absolute, then Brahmahavir, the ghee, or the clarified butter, the offering itself, becomes absolute. If you think about it, when you offer this, let's say this ghee, this butter oil, as they call it in Australia, when you offer this into the fire, it's transformed into fire. So that's the metaphor here. So Brahmarpanam, the offering to the absolute, Brahmahavir, the offering substance becomes absolute, Brahmagno, and the recipient, the fire, Agni, from which we get the English word ignite. So the Agni, the fire, is absolute, and Brahmanahutam, and the person who invokes the divine and makes the offering is transformed into an absolute being. Brahmanahutam. And then Brahmaiva, Tina, Gantavyam. And the person who offers can only go, or surely will go, to that same absolute realm. How? Brahma Karma Samadhina. This is the revolution which the Gita was, since it was spoken. By the samadhi of spiritual work. In other words, not simply sitting down passively, but actually you can act dynamically in the world, and your actions become spiritual and bring you into samadhi. So now let's go back to your question. We have a situation here. You are an eternal soul. You're an eternal soul. You are an eternal soul, but you have certain God-given faculties. You have a body, which different limbs and senses and all that. And you have a mind, you have intelligence, you have feelings, you have artistic power. I mean, you have all, there's all kinds of stuff there. And so when you dance for Krishna, and there's even the Devi Dasis, there were these beautiful girls since ancient times would go into the temples, they would close the doors of the temples, and they would just dance for God, for his pleasure. And so when you dance for God, for the pleasure of the absolute, then your body becomes an offering. Your body, all of your life energy, you're offering it through dance. And so according to this principle, which Krishna explains, your body is transformed into a spiritual reality. And when you take spiritual food, or you offer it, then take it, you're actually spiritualizing your anatomy. When you sing, your voice becomes spiritualized. When you talk about Krishna, when you look at spiritual objects, when you chant, for example, this house is an offering. And I personally spent something here, and it was an offering. And so the house has taken on a spiritual quality, and I got some points in my spiritual bank account, which is what I wanted. I wanted the spiritual points. So I could somehow become a better person, a better soul. And so you can see that everything you do, working and creating, doing art, dancing, singing, cooking, everything, writing, giving talks. So the secret is to engage your whole body, your mind, your intelligence, whatever faculties you have, whatever powers and abilities you have, engage everything. Find a way to connect every part of you in yoga by offering that part of you in some kind of devotional activity, and then your entire being becomes an offering, and your entire being becomes absolute, becomes spiritual, by that connection with Krishna. Yep.
So are you saying by making a conscious choice,
mm-hmm,
to, shall I say, consecrate yourself, your
mm-hmm
entire being, all your faculties, as you say, to God, and then this dirty filter is constantly being cleansed,
mm-hmm,
by everything that we do as we renew this consecration.
Exactly.
And God does the cleansing for us by our cooperation in being a willing
surrendering.
Yes, it's a free surrender of oneself.
Yes.
And so he then makes you his own because you've given yourself to God, and then the filter gets cleansed through the surrender.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly right.
So, okay.
That's exactly right. So there, for example, there's a statement in a beautiful text called the Rama Sanghita where it said, okay, this is real nice, I'll quote this. I haven't quoted this in a while. Hope I'm not too rusty, but it's a beautiful verse. Jastvindra gopa mata vendram ahosa karma. Come on. Bandhanu rupa phala vajanam atanoti karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. This means that in this universe, Jastvindra gopam, from the Indra gopa, which means like a little bug, an insect, from the Indra gopa up to mighty Indra, who's the lord of material heaven. So from the insect up to the lord of heaven. Jastvindra gopam atavendram ahosu karma bandhanu rupa phala bhajanamata. The Lord imposes upon everyone, from the bug to the lord of heaven, the acceptance of the consequences of their previous activities, their karma. Bandhanu rupa phala bhajanam. And the bondage of these consequences. Because whenever we act materially, in the material world, not in devotion, not for a spiritual purpose, then, of course, every action produces a reaction. The reaction adheres to us. The reaction attaches itself to us. And so as we are acting in the world every day, every moment, we're acting, we're actually accumulating reactions. And the accumulation of these reactions is karma. That's what the karma is. Or as Patanjali calls it in the Yoga Sutras, the sanskaras, that's what our karma is. It's the momentum, the consequences of our previous acts. So for example, let's say in this world, in this life, I have a tendency to be proud or to have some other, whatever selfish desire, rather than being in pure, clear consciousness. That selfishness or that vanity is the momentum for my previous vain and selfish acts. It's the consequences, the momentum, the sanskara.
It's like the residue from the...
Yes.
Okay.
But a residue kind of sits there. This is a dynamic residue.
Okay.
It's a residue which really shakes us up. And it sort of has us in its hold, in its grip. And so this verse says that although the Lord, Krishna, imposes upon everyone, from the bug to the Lord of Heaven, the acceptance of the consequences of the bondage of their karma. Karmani nirhadhati kintu, however, this is a big however, that same Krishna burns up entirely all of the karma of those who actually accept him with devotion. So Krishna personally does it. There's another statement in the Bhagavatam, beautiful statement where it said, Shinvatang Swakata Krishna Punya Savana Kirtana Hriyantaksta Ya Bhadrani Vidunoti Suhritsatam. That Krishna is Suhritsatam. He has a good heart. He is good-hearted to those who are good people, to those who are actually virtuous, to those who are even spiritual. Krishna is very good-hearted to them. And when they hear, they listen, Shinbatan, when they listen to descriptions of Krishna, Krishna is called Punya Shavana Kirtana, which means that one becomes purified, punya, or pious, purified, simply by hearing and speaking about Krishna. Because the idea being that, well, there is Shabda Brahma, there is spiritual sound, there are, that when we say absolute truth, and this is, of course, the key word in the Upanishads, Brahma, the absolute truth. Absolute means that God and the name of God and descriptions of God are all one. They're all on the same spiritual platform. I mean, you find in every major world religion, probably many minor ones, but certainly in every major one, a recognition of the holy name, even in Buddhism, if you read the Padma Sutra. So every religion talks about the name of the Lord as an incarnation of the Lord. I mean, just to give a few one example, I once wrote an essay on this when I was at UCLA years ago, but in the Old Testament, when the first temple is built, David wants to build it, the king, but because of his adultery, and worse than adultery, he is not allowed to build the temple, so his son Solomon builds it. And there's all these descriptions in the Old Testament about the plans to build the temple, the preparations, the actual construction, the grand opening, and so on. And in all these descriptions, it's said over and over and over again that the temple is meant to be a temple to the name of the Lord. And that as God lives in his realm, the name of the Lord will live in the temple. And you find this everywhere in Christianity, I mean, in every world religion, you find this recognition that the name is God. Mm-hmm. And they may not have, you know, a developed philosophy behind it, but they have that recognition. And so when you simply talk about Krishna or God, or hear others speaking accurately, you become purified simply by that vibration. Here's an example. We'd use the term vibration. And then it's a Krishna, Hridayantaksta, Krishna standing within our hearts. Standing within our hearts. Krishna shakes off, literally, vidunoti, you could say purify, literally sort of shakes off, like you shake a rug and shake all the dust off. Krishna shakes off of us all of our, everything which is abhadra, everything which is inauspicious, everything which leads to misfortune, everything which is not desirable. Krishna, within our heart, acting as our good-hearted friend, will remove it. If we simply listen, if we can simply hear and understand. And so it's a deal. So Plato is very concerned with the purification of the soul. If you read Plato, and he was halfway back to Krishna. I mean, from between us and Krishna, he was halfway back, and very much influenced by Pythagoras, who was something right out of the Bhagavad Gita in many ways. So yes, purification, it is one of the prime topics, how to purify your filter, how to purify all your senses, your mind, your intelligence, your body, so that everything begins to act spiritually.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So, I guess that's my
cue. That was great. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to meet you.